Sevos, and welcome to another episode of the Pro Hockey Pod, episode 33. This week, former Celebr Wolfa. That's how we met. But this guy I had the privilege of managing, I would say, for 2 years, getting to know him, seeing everything about him on the ice, what he can bring the teams, how important he was. And this guy came up through the OHL route. So this week we've gone back to the OHL. The past couple of weeks, we were really, really hard on the NCAA guys. But now on the major junior route, still playing now over in Denmark. Had a crazy journey along the way. Happy to have him on the podcast this week. Welcome, Brett Thompson.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Happy to be here. So we always, at the start, man, like we always just kind of go back. And I think you're... like even for you at the beginning is kind of unique. So kind of like me, you were born in a small town, Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. That's where you grew up. And also like with these small towns, you know, came, you know, the major junior team. So the OHL team, you know, I had the Peets when I grew up, I had the Sioux. So when you're first growing up in the Sioux there, is that like first where you learned to love the game of hockey and start playing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my dad played for the team in 1972, the year they went into the OHL. So, I mean, both my parents, my mom had her brother that played and a lot of her cousins played. So both my parents were kind of into hockey. I was kind of born into a hockey family. And even right when I was born, my parents billeted Greyhounds. So I think it was just automatic. We had Greyhounds living at our place since I was a kid up until maybe I was 4 or 5 years old. And I was just always playing mini six in the basement with the Greyhounds and going to every game. And I think it was just, I didn't have a chance. I was going to love the game one way or another.
That's awesome. And it makes me curious too, like similar to me, like, did you like immediately kind of have that love for the Greyhounds? Cause I said, it's a small town. Like, you know, there's nothing really to do there other than, you know, whenever the Greyhounds play at home, like that's kind of the thing to do in town. And as you said, you were building a guy as well. So that kind of introduced you to kind of that style of hockey, like that route as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, ever since I was like I said, even before I remember, my parents said like, all I was doing was playing hockey, but like, I don't really remember those times, but I see pictures of me playing mini six when I was really young, always wearing a Greyhound jersey. I mean, a lot of people set their sights or their dream is to play in the NHL and stuff. But as a kid from the Sioux, that seems kind of far-fetched. My dream was always to play for the Greyhounds. That was what I wanted to do, obviously.
It's crazy how like when we're growing up, like we just idolize those guys and think of them as if they're NHLers. You know what I mean? Like it's...
yeah.
Just because everyone revolves around them. So
yeah, it's like funny, like you grow up and you're like, oh, like these guys are like the NHL players, they're old and stuff. And then you turn 16 and you're playing in the league and you're like, these guys weren't that big, they weren't that old. Like you're just a kid, you feel like still. So it's pretty funny to be on both different roles.
I felt like though, like when we were watching, like the players in that league were more like men when we came up, like it was kind of like you looked at them as teenagers, I guess.
So yeah. Just... You see, it seemed like they were more like men. I don't know, but like maybe they weren't, I don't know.
But, so growing up in the Sioux, as I said, what was your minor hockey path, right? Because like, you know, small town like that, I noticed just from like looking at elite prospects and stuff, like couple different teams like were out of the Sioux there. So how did it work? Like it said at one point you were Sioux Thunder, Sioux Greyhounds, yeah. Sault Ste. Marie North Stars. Like basically what was the difference in kind of the structure back then when you were growing up?
So back then it was you played so like I played up a year, your first year Adam, the 91s played with the 90s. And there was three rep teams, they called it Sault Ste. Marie reps, everyone was called. And it was three traveling teams, basically. So there was a lot of kids with three teams. And then the age change happened. So I don't know what it was like before then, but we jumped up to our own level in Pee Wee. We had two teams as 91s. We were just in the AA. And and then we did that for 1 year. And then Pee Wee Major, AAA, we became, and that was one team. And then the way it worked was in Bantam, there was two different coaches. One had the Greyhounds and one had the Sioux Thunder. and they made an agreement that they wanted to stay with the same team for 2 years. So when it was my turn to go to Bantam, Sioux Thunder was the minor Bantam team, and the Greyhounds were the major Bantam team that went with the 90s from the year before, kind of thing. It's kind of confusing, hard to explain. But so I joined Sioux Thunder, and then I played with them for 2 years. I was AAA, Bantam, minor, and major. And then back then, again, we didn't have minor midget in the Sioux, so we just had major midget. So there was just a AAA major midget team. And obviously, it kind of sucks for a lot of guys that I played with, because when there's a major midget team that you're all trying out for, there's only probably 4 or 5 15-year-olds they're going to take. So it kind of sucks. It was a kind of brutal path for a lot of guys, because then that it's you don't make that team and you're kind of you're back to playing house league, and maybe they give up the dream or whatnot. So, but now I think they've changed it. There's minor midget and that stuff now. But I was fortunate enough to make that team in my first year to, I guess, keep the dream alive or be excited with hockey still.
Crazy that there are so many teams, like, you know, different like branches, like in the Sioux, because it is a very small town. But you know, hey, hockey town, lots of kids want to play.
It's changed a lot now. Like, I can't even follow it now. But I think like every team's called the Greyhounds now, or I don't know. It's too crazy for me to even pay attention to now.
How was your, like, and this, I think this is good to kind of say, like, you would have been introduced early to travel, because obviously you guys are way the F north.
Oh, yeah.
what was your leagues like? Like, who were you guys playing?
Yeah. So in minor Bantam, we played in Michigan League, like an Upper Peninsula Michigan League. So played against like Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, Green Bay, Marquette, I don't know, like a bunch of random towns up in northern Michigan. And then major Bantam, we would play like Sudbury, obviously, was our big rivalry. They were the closest team, 3.5 hours. And then, I don't know, North Bay, 4.5 hours. And we had like Timmins, which is like, I don't even know, 6 to 8 hours. I think that was probably our farthest. I'm trying to think. There was like 2 or 3 Sudbury teams. And then, North Bay, Timmins. And then when we got to like midget, there was like all those same teams. And then we also had Kapuskasing, which was like 10 hours, like right outside Hearst, Ontario, which is like, I don't even know where it is on a map, way up north somewhere. Claude Giroux's from there. That's all I know.
That's all that matters. Well, first of all, I'd say props to your parents for going through all that. I can't imagine, like, let's go on a Tuesday to so-and-so to play 6 hours away, and then you got to be at school the next day. Like,
we didn't really play like weekday games. That was a thing. So like the games are always like a Friday, Saturday. So we'd skip school on the Friday and bus up there. We started doing buses in like really early, like Pee Wee or something. And then, it would always be Friday, Saturday. So if we went to Sudbury, maybe we'd play one of the Sudbury teams on the Friday, the next on the Saturday. But if we went to Timmins, it would be back-to-back Friday, Saturday in Timmins. And then during the weekdays, we'd play like the house league teams, maybe 2 or 3 years older than us for exhibition games, I guess. But those games are kind of a mess because those guys are older and like they want to prove it. Yeah. So those games got pretty physical and we couldn't really hold up to the physicality, but taught you how to be tough pretty early.
Well, actually, it's a funny you bring that up. It kind of brought me to my next like point here is, you know, you were always like, seeing you play obviously for 2 years, like I've known you were always known for your, you know, playmaking ability, your hard work, but also like your grittiness. And you're not by any means the tallest guy out there, but you definitely, you know, don't back down from anyone. And you would think that you're 6'4", but I believe you're not. So was that kind of instilled at you at a young age? Like, is that just kind of all you always were, like whether it was from, you know, your parents or from, as you said, playing these house league teams that who are 3 years older and you kind of had no choice?
I probably have to give it to my brother. He's 4 years older than me and played a lot of mini six over the years, and he was crushing me. He was like, he played AAA growing up in the Sioux, like nothing higher than that, but he was more of a grinder. And he always says, like, oh, if I played with you, I'd get you the pocket. That's the kind of player you need. You need to play with me growing up. I would have protected you and stuff. But just getting into fights with him during the mini six, I think, taught me that, I got the shit beat out of me for the most part as a young kid. But then as I got older, I started giving it back and maybe sometimes got the better hand. And it taught me, like, if you just keep showing up to the battle, I guess eventually you'll get a win. And so, like, yeah, just like even playing with him and his friends, like, you just learn to be tough over the years.
Brotherly love or brotherly abuse, yeah. whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, more abuse turned into love over the years, but more abuse at the young age.
Ah, good. But like, as you said, your brother, like, 4 years older, so he probably was going through like a different type of hockey, you know, growing up. Like, we went through like the transition period. Like, it was still kind of the old school, but they were trying to get away from it. So
yeah, exactly.
I guess he prepared you for that, which is good.
Yeah.
You kind of already touched on this, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I always like to ask people like why they chose a certain route. And, you know, you grew up in the Sioux, you billeted Greyhounds when you're young, your dad played in the OHL. So it kind of seems set in stone that that would kind of be where your first priority was. But had you ever thought about the other route, or was it just because you wanted to play for the Sioux? Kind of, that was one of your goals.
Yeah, no, my dad actually, like, he didn't push me either way. My parents, they said, like, make your own decision. But my dad talked to me a lot about going NCAA. But at the time, I wasn't really willing to wait if I didn't have to. So, I mean, he said, like, think about it. You go to school, you play the same years, and you get done, you're done in school. And my parents were really strict on school. They wanted me to, even when I went to the OHL, they said, like, remember, like, school when you're done, like, you have to go to school. So he kind of said, like, let's go to NCAA game, check it out. So we went to a couple games, checked it out in Sioux, Michigan, Lake State there. But it was just for me, if I went to Sudbury when I was 16 and I got the chance to make it that first year, it was just a no-doubter for me. Maybe if I had to sit at home another couple years and not play in the OHL right away, maybe I would have changed my mind. But once, when I was 16 and they offered me a contract, I knew that that's what I was gonna take for sure.
Yeah. And before, like, we get to you going that route, like, obviously you got drafted in the fourth round there to Sudbury. So kind of funny, you know, getting drafted to the rival 3 hours down the road. But you know, that first year, like, you ended up starting, I believe, or played some games at least in the NOJHL. So that's the tier two league up there, the Sudbury Junior Wolves. And just that first year, like, based on, you know, how you did at camp after being drafted and stuff, like, did you feel you were ready to make the jump right away to the OHL, or like, did they just kind of send you down for a bit to kind of, you know, get your feet under you before bringing you up for the rest of the year?
Yeah. So they had a really good team the year before. They went to the finals. So obviously the year I jumped in, a lot of guys were gone. There was a lot of spots. I think I had an okay camp. I was small, like 145 pounds. So I felt I could skate with everyone. I was faster then than I am now, but it was, the physicality was lacking. I mean, I worked out hard, but I just couldn't put on weight just at that age. And so I came out of camp and I thought I did good enough. They signed me to a contract out of there. I did pretty good in exhibition games. And then I actually played the first 9 games of the season with Sudbury. But they had told me before, like, eventually you're going to go down. And once I played my 10th, they had to keep me for the year. So once I played 9, they said, we're going to send you down for a bit. I mean, it was good. Like, I was practicing with both teams. So I'd have like 2 practices a day, play with the Junior Wolves when they had games for 15 games. But I think it was good for me to see, because when I went down there, I wanted to get back up so bad. So it was like a little extra drive.
I mean, when you went down, you know, at 16, being able to put up 11 points in 15 games, you know, in that league, and that obviously showed, I think, you were ready. And as you said, maybe you were fueled a bit to get back up when you got sent down originally. But how was that first year? So it's always a change, I think, when you know, you would have been used to travel, but in terms of, you know, you have the build experience, right? So you're in Sudbury, which is 3.5-4 hours away from home. You know, new town, new school kind of thing. Yeah. You're 16-year-old playing with 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds in the OHL. Like, how was that experience for you?
The school was tough. The school was definitely tough. We weren't, the Wolves weren't a liked team at the school, so we didn't get treated great at that school, but my billets were great. I mean, they asked an older guy to pick me up for school every day that didn't go to school, so it was tough to get rides to school, but my billets would make sure that I got there on time every day, and they made sure I was, anytime I needed a ride anywhere, they drove me, and anything I wanted for dinner, they made me. They were unreal billets. I can't say enough good things about them, but the school was definitely tough. It was a little different. Like in the Sioux, I went to school with all my friends. I knew everyone at the school. I knew the teacher. So it was just, that was probably the toughest kind of turnaround.
And then you're like the next year, you end up starting at Sudbury again. And then like, kind of funny that you get traded to back to your hometown, the Sioux Greyhounds there. Like, did you have any idea that that was coming, or was it just kind of one of the things out of the blue?
Yeah, a little bit. So the next year I had a lot more confidence. I gained a lot more strength. By the end of my first year, I was playing on the third line in Sudbury. So I was thinking like the next year, if I come in a little bit better, play third line, I'll be able to produce a little more. But the start of that year, I was on the fourth line again. And so I had asked for my agent at the time was actually Kyle Dubas. He was just starting out. So I talked to him and he said, maybe it's best if I get traded. So he told me to go in and talk. And I went in and talked to the GM and the coach, and it was the same guy at that time. But I just said, like, I understand that I can't be playing over the centers we had. We had older centers, so maybe if going somewhere else would be better for me at this point in my career. I want to play. I want to get better. And at that point, I felt like if I was playing on the fourth line, I was kind of at a standstill. I wasn't going to get better anymore because I'd already kind of done that process the year before and gotten through it. And so that went on kind of for months. That was like probably in October that we asked that. Never got traded to January, but during those times, there was a lot of rumblings that the Sioux would maybe be calling because they were good the year before and they were going in a younger direction that year. So I heard that and I talked to Kyle about that, and he's just like, yeah, we don't know. Like, don't get your hopes up type thing. But yeah, it was lucky it worked out.
It's a big year for you too at this point, because that's like technically your NHL draft year. So, yeah. You know, you probably saw, you know, not going to get drafted playing fourth line minutes and, you know, nothing, as you said, against the Sioux, but they were very stacked at the center position. So it would have been better for you to go somewhere else. And obviously to be able to go home is pretty cool. And I'm curious, like, you know, you end up playing, you know, parts of the next three seasons, I would say there. Like, how was it for you, like being the local kid playing for, you know, one, your hometown team, and also a team that you dreamed of playing for?
Yeah, it was unreal. Like, it was just how I imagined it, like dream come true. The fans there, it can go one of two ways. When you're a local guy, they either hate you or they love you. I was lucky enough to be liked. I think like my small stature like helps fans kind of feel for me. So I think that like definitely helped me. But the fans like seemed to enjoy me, and it kind of helped me play better while I was there, like broke out of my shell. I knew that I was a liked player there, so I didn't have to worry about that. And it kind of just like helped me play my game and I guess bust through into another level that I hadn't played in Sudbury.
I'm curious too, like, especially after that third year, like you end up putting up, you know, a point per game, the 2009-10 season. Were you getting any like interest from, you know, development camps from teams and stuff like that? Cause that's really common at, like, you know, even for guys who aren't drafted, kind of that third, fourth year, like they're getting these invites so teams can see like what available free agents that, you know, teams might have missed on, or what could be available for the future?
Yeah, not so many after that year. No, it was more the next year. But no, I didn't really talk too much about it that year. But honestly, like, I wasn't even really thinking about it that much. But after that year, I was just excited that I established myself in the league that year. So before that year started, I had mono we had fitness testing, and I went and I came for first or second place in all the fitness testing. And then I got diagnosed with mono the next day. So I missed all of training camp. And when I came back after training camp, the coach said, like, oh, well, you haven't shown too much, so we might release you. So, like, after that year, I was just happy, honestly, that I had a good year and that I knew, like, I was established enough to stay in the league.
Jesus. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Pretty wild.
Interesting, yeah. Tactic. But so then, you know, it seemed to be, you know, I don't know how to phrase this. I really don't mean it to sound bad, but it seemed to be a common theme in your OHL career. You know, you were a common guy to be moved to teams. You know, yeah. I like to think that means you were very wanted. You end up going to Erie next. And McDavid would not have been there yet. But you know, at this point, you're kind of in your last, you know, year and a half of eligibility in the OHL. Like, in this part of your career, you're obviously putting up a lot of points. Like, are you just looking to, hey, I want to go somewhere where that is a chance to maybe, you know, make a run here for the, you know, the championship and maybe the Mem Cup as well?
Yeah, that's exactly what that was. I mean, I loved the time in the Sioux. I didn't want to leave, but at the same time that year, we're right on the edge of playoffs, maybe not making it. That would have been my fourth year in the league and made playoffs once. So in kind of talking to like the ownership and the GM, I just said, like, if I can go somewhere that the team has a good chance to win, I would like that at that point in my career, because I mean, one dream was to play for the Greyhounds, but my next dream was to win a Memorial Cup. So I knew that wasn't happening in the Sioux anymore at that time. So I wanted to go. And honestly, when I got traded to Erie, I was like, oh my God, I got to go to Erie. Like, everyone, they kind of had that thing about them in the OHL. Like, nobody wants to go to Erie back then, before McDavid went there. But then I went there, and honestly, probably the most fun I had playing hockey was in Erie. I loved everything about it there.
Yeah, they had a couple big name guys, like Greg McKeag was there, Phil Veroni, who plays in Dusseldorf now, and Anthony Luciani. I remember him. He was my age. So, I mean, it was one of those like up and coming places. They'd just been like kind of lower for so long that like when we were growing up through the OHL, and then they finally, you know, were able to make strides. And then of course, as you said, later down the road, they got McDavid. But after that season, so here's a big point that I think is kind of important just to hear like kind of your reasoning for it, but you're going into your overage year, and there's always that debate, you know, do I play my overage year, or do I exercise, you know, my school package and go to school? And then, you know, you end up deciding to play that fifth year. What was your reasoning behind that? And, you know, obviously, again, as I mentioned before, like, you started on a team and then, you know, went somewhere at the end to hopefully make another run.
Yeah. So after that year, definitely thought about both. I was leaning way more towards coming back, because I, like I said, my dream was to win a Memorial Cup. I hadn't won one yet. I still had a year left to do that. So I didn't really want to leave the OHL at that time. But then in talking to Erie, they said, like, if you come back for one more year, then we'll give you another year of schooling. So, I mean, that made the decision pretty easy. An extra year of schooling was going to help me one way or another. So that made it an easy decision. And then they also told all the older guys that were coming back, like, if we aren't good off the start, we're trading all of you to good teams to give you a chance. So, I mean, it was pretty much a win-win, I thought. So
I was going to say,
it was an easy choice.
You played 9 games for them and got a full year of schooling. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a good deal on my end.
Good agent.
Yeah.
But so I'm curious, you know, being an older guy at that point, you know, as you said, it is your last year. Did they come to you and say, okay, like, you know, maybe there's two options here. Like, which one would you rather do? Or it just kind of worked out where it ended up being Sarnia?
They told me I was like the one overager there. We had five of them, but the other ones had all spent most of their whole career in Erie. So they told me like I was going to be the first one to be moved when we knew the team wasn't good. And then they didn't really discuss with me who it was going to be. There was, like I said, the OHL is funny, but like, it's, I don't know if it's still the same way, but there was like fan pages. There's a lot of rumblings. Like if you watch those, so I don't know. I knew from the rumors that it was going to be a good team from the, if the rumors were true, that it was going to be one of whatever four teams. And I thought all teams had a chance that year. So I was from, Greg McKegg was actually my roommate. I lived with him when I was in the area. You mentioned him earlier. He just like, he woke me up. And he's like, GM's trying to get a hold of you. You got traded. You idiot. Wake up or something like that. And I was like, what? What? He's like, yeah, you got traded to Sarnia. He actually broke the news to me before I even got on the phone. So, but yep. I was excited. It was Sarnia, honestly, out of all the teams I was thinking of at that time, I was most excited because they had a stacked roster. I was excited to be joining it.
Yeah, I mean, they got guys, you know, like Nail Yakupov, for example, was there. A couple other really good guys. So you definitely had a deep roster. I saw your goalies like JP Anderson. I think Brandon Maxwell was there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Jenyuk, Ryan Spooner, Reed Boucher, Charlie Soreau.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys. We had a Swedish guy that played World Juniors that year, won the gold. We had a deep, deep team that confined it all year.
I mean, that sometimes happened, but you know, throughout that year, obviously, and you know, it's your last year, and I know you're trying to enjoy that last year being in the OHL, but at the same time, you know, you're starting to think about the next step. Was there any debate at that point? I know your parents gave you great advice, so I think this answer will be short and quick, but was there any debate, hey, I could maybe go play pro after this, or you knew right away that, no, okay, it's time to get the school done, and then once I'm done that, I'll do what I want?
In my head, for a split second, I thought I wanted to go play pro, and then I brought that up at the dinner table as the season was over, and I learned pretty quickly that it was going to be a problem if I went and tried to play pro with my parents. Yeah, forfeiting the school package was something they thought was bizarre. I mean, now they have a year and a half to go, I think, but back then it was only half a year, so it's a pretty quick decision. It's one that, like, I'm thankful that I had them telling me what I should be doing, because if I made the decision, I would have went to the East Coast League. And looking back on it, I mean, the best decision I made was going to school.
And did you, like, I don't know how it works for guys in major junior, like at the end, when you go in NCAA, you know, you're talking to multiple teams, you're getting invited down to go on like visits and stuff like that. Was it similar for you? And like, how many schools were you in contact with?
Yeah, it was very similar. I mean, I listened. I didn't turn a team down right away. I took it they would like send you like pamphlets in the mail and then send text messages during the year. And then I would just kind of say like, we'll see after the year what it's going to be. And then after the year, I had narrowed it down. I really wanted to go out east because they had different rules on scholarships, on how much money they could give you for scholarships as compared to Ontario. But I did also think about going to Lakehead in Ontario. I had a lot of ex-teammates and friends that went there, especially during my time in the Sioux. A lot of Sioux boys playing there. So I was kind of talking to them mostly, and I was leaning towards them. But then, I don't know, I think me getting traded three times in the OHL scared them, from what I heard. So, I mean, they made the decision for me. And then I narrowed it down to Acadia University, St. Mary's University, and UPEI. My dad's brother went through the OHL, and then he went to UPI and played. And I think he won a national championship out there. So, and he still lives out there. So I was leaning towards actually going out there because I knew it'd be more comfortable. I had family out there and whatnot, but I said, I'm going to take these are the three teams. I'm going to take a trip out to each one and see. And actually, Acadia was the lowest on my list. I knew St. Mary's was a great hockey program. They had made it to the finals the year before or something. So that's what I was kind of leaning towards. And actually, Acadia's coach called my dad and talked to my dad instead of me. My dad's like, oh, I think you should go out there for a visit. The coach sounds like a good guy. You should go out there for a visit. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, I'll go out there for a visit to keep you happy. And then actually, so I went to St. Mary's. And then I told UPI, I don't need a recruiting trip out there because I'm probably coming. And they wanted me to come and introduce me instead of come for a recruiting trip. But then, so I went to St. Mary's in Halifax and then partnered that with Acadia, the same trip. So after I left St. Mary's, I had a fun time. And then I went to Acadia. I drove into Wolfville, and pretty much right when I got there, I was like, okay, I think I want to come here. I could just tell by the city. It's small. It's a small town, small class sizes, and it just seemed more fitted for me. And during this whole time, I've been trying to recruit every overage I played with that year to come out east with me. They all didn't want to come. Everyone wanted to stay in Ontario. And so when I got to Wolfville, I actually got a call from now one of my best friends, but I played with him in Erie, Mike Cazola. And he called me and he said, hey, have you been to that Wolfville place yet where Acadia is? And I was like, yeah, I'm here right now. And he said, I think I might want to go out there. If you go out there, I'll go out there. And then so after that, it was pretty much I had to call UPI and say, like, oh, I'm going to need that recruiting trip because I'm leaning another way now. I don't think they were too happy about it, but I mean, it all worked out for me.
You played with some guys, some beauties, I would say, at your school. One guy, I don't even know him personally. I just know him because he shot at John Elkins every year for years, and he was just hilarious, was Liam Helas. this guy, like, he was so good at the goalie schools at just like torching you, and then like he'd give you some confidence, and then you'd throw a chirp to this guy and he'd throw some stupid remark at you, come in, dangle you, put it up shelf, and then just like be smiling with his like glasses on.
Yeah. I was gonna say, with his cross-eyed eyes,
like,
oh, Heels is hilarious. Actually, my line mate, or my line out there for the 3 years, was me, Cazola, and Helas. We had a blast together, the three of us. He lived right underneath us. It was hilarious times.
No, like, no offense to him, but I could not believe, like, just because of how he was as a person, that he played in the OHL. Like, I could not believe it. Like, I was like, there's no way this guy's a regular.
He's funny. He won't mind the chirps. He likes to chirp himself too. He'd be like saying something like, wow, your eyes, like, he put his glass on and be like, your eyes are so bad. How do you see the puck out there? He'd be like, I don't see the puck.
All shadows. Yeah, and then obviously Chris Owens, I ended up coaching him in Bietigheim the 1 year, so I know him a little bit. And I remember Andrew Clark played in the Dell too as well. Oh, but yeah. One thing, you brought up a good comment before, and I thought it'd be cool to talk about it. It might have changed a little since you were there, but you said the rules, the difference between like out east with like how much they could give you in terms of scholarships and maybe in Ontario, like it might be different now, but like when you were going through this, like what exactly were those rules and differences?
Yeah, they changed them while I was there, and I think they were grandfathered in. But I think while I was there, I'm pretty sure there was no cap on how much. So a lot of teams run hockey schools. And the players come in August and they work the hockey schools. And I don't think there was a limit on how much you could pay the players for the hockey schools. So, I mean, Acadia wasn't the only place doing it. There's like, I mean, UMB's pretty famous for it. but they changed the rules, I think. So now a school can only, on top of a full ride scholarship, you can only make 5,000, I want to say it is, from the school. So like, it's not from the school, but Acadia University and Acadia Minor Hockey is associated through the school. So they made, I think they capped it somewhere around 5,000, I think. But before, like, you'd hear some guys on some teams making a lot more than that. And I think in Ontario, maybe it always was 3,500. So 3,500 compared to no cap is quite a big difference.
For sure. And another thing, I guess, like, as I said, I didn't go this route, so it's curious to kind of talk about it, is, so when you're doing these school packages through the OHL or major junior, I'll say, for the other two leagues as well, and then you're deciding on school. So let's just say, for example, Brock University is $7,000 a semester or whatever, and then Acadia is $10,000 a semester. Like, no matter what you end up deciding, like, do these schools like have to just kind of like eat it? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's your choice where you want to go, and they have to pay for it no matter what because of you playing in the league for, you know, the 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, no. When I signed in the OHL, I signed for a certain amount of school package. So I think I was a fourth round pick. And at that time, we knew a fourth round pick from 4 years earlier to Sudbury, and he got $6,500 a year. And now I was 4 years later. And so we asked for $7,500. So that's what I got a year. So that that kind of did matter. I mean, whatever school I went to, that's the money I was going to be getting from the OHL.
Okay.
I think now it's not a negotiation anymore. Now it's based off your hometown university.
Okay. And that money, because, like, you know, for someone like you, you played on four teams, I think, or four or five teams, like, is that shared by those teams, or is it the league who pays it for in the end?
It was, I think, before my time, the teams, but there was too many issues with that. So now the league pays it, and then I think they go fight for the money instead of the players trying to fight the teams for the money.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very interesting. And the other thing, when we were growing up, I don't know the exact number, but I believe, like, in the OHL or major junior, they consider you like semi-pro athletes because you guys get, like, don't you get like a weekly
$50 a week.
Yeah, what's it called again? A weekly what's the term?
Weekly allowance or
per diem or allowance? Yeah. So you were making a whopping $200 a month.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think my parents said when they billed it in like 93, they were making the same. And I was in 2011 making the same. But now it's gotten a little better for them too, because there was a bunch of lawsuits or whatever when I was at school. I think now they get, I don't know how much they get weekly, but they also get, I think, reimbursements for shopping or something, a certain mm-hmm. amount a month. So it's gotten better for them for sure.
Still, but crazy.
I mean, I wasn't growing up in the Sioux. Maybe for me it was different. I didn't care about the $50 a week. So that's what I knew what I signed up for. It was a school package that I thought I signed up for. So
no, exactly. It's just, as I said, it's cool to hear, like, the justification of, like, because I was having this conversation with somebody the other day where it's like, you play in the OHL, that burns your eligibility for NCAA, but if you play NCAA first, you can still come back to the OHL. Like, it's just like one of those weird things. But no, hey, I learned something new today about the school packages, and probably some listeners did too, because, you know, it's not always available, that information. But so you end up choosing Acadia, as you said, and you end up playing 5 years there.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to ask you, like, how was your experience there over the years? What did you end up majoring in?
You're asking me that right now.
Yeah. What are you majoring in? Yeah.
So after my 4 years, I majored in recreation management. It was called, it's now called community development. It was something I kind of got into, and after 2 years wasn't so interested in it, but figured I'd gone too far to switch. So I kind of just battled through it. And by the end of my fourth, that's, if you want to lead into it, by the end of my fourth year, that's how I knew I was coming back for a fifth year, because I knew I wanted to do something else.
That was going to be my next question, like, because a lot of guys, you know, they play four and then they're moving on or they're done, and you end up coming back for a fifth. So that was the reason, because you kind of figured, you know, I don't really want to do what I've been taking in school, so it's time mm-hmm. to change, and I have an extra year to do it.
Yeah, so I went 4 years, graduated from recreation management, and near the end of my fourth year, I was like, okay, if I go play pro hockey now, the whole point of coming to school was that if I go pro hockey, once I'm done pro hockey, I can get a job in whatever I graduate with. But I wasn't too interested in any of the jobs that I would be doing after pro hockey. So I thought about what I wanted to do, and Acadia had an accelerated teachers program that started a week after I graduated and ended the next August, the start of August. So so that's only 1 year of hockey eligibility for me. And then August, I could decide where I was going to play pro type thing. So I decided to do that. And for sure, the best decision I made, because, I mean, I've already started that kind of next chapter and I'm enjoying it. So it was worth the extra year for sure.
Yeah, and I think too, like, and we're going to talk about the already starting part later, because yeah. I remembered us talking about this, but I think it's like, I think so many people, whether you go the major junior route or you go the NCAA route, like, you know, for you, the 4 years of CIS, U Sports, me, the 4 years of NCAA, like, it's fake life. Like, you're living in a bubble, you know, worrying about, you know, sports, school, partying, like just making memories. And I think, you know, for you, someone who got lucky to have a fifth year of doing it, like to stay one more year, is probably something that you'll remember being like, you know, I'm happy I got 5 years instead of four. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those are for sure the best years in university. I had so much fun. Like, I'll never forget the laughs and memories I made in university. Hilarious times.
Easy with Liam Hillis. did Acadia, like, so how was the fan support like in Acadia?
Pretty good. The hockey team draws really good. The football team draws more students, probably similar crowds, but a lot more students. The hockey team, I mean, the next closest hockey team to us at that level was, or a similar level, was the Mooseheads, but they're an hour and 15 drive for people. So we got a lot of that local support from season ticket holders and stuff. I think the buildings holds 2,500 people and we get around 2,000 a night. I mean, there's only population there when school's in is 6,000. When school's out, it's 2,000. So I think we drew pretty well for the population.
Well, it's good too for, like, you hear about the big schools being able to draw, but then you also hear about some schools where they're getting 120 people, you know, so it would have been a good experience, I'm sure. When you were done there, as you said, you finished doing the fifth year there, accelerated teachers. And I'm very curious, the next decision you made was to go play pro in Europe. You end up going to Denmark there, which is a very good league. And I'm curious, like, what was the reasoning behind, you know, going right to Europe right away instead of, you know, maybe trying the coast, you know, or North American pro?
Yeah, I wasn't interested in the 24-hour bus trips, honestly. That's like, and I was 3-4 years into my relationship with my now wife at the time, and it would have just been a lot of time apart, obviously, in the East Coast League. There's a lot of travel for those guys. She really wanted to come to Europe and kind of experience it. And so I said, like, if I can get into a league that I'm happy about coming over here for, then I'll do that. If I have to go to the East Coast League for 1 year and then come over here, I would do it. But I would prefer to just come over here right away.
I did the same thing, man. So I'm with you there. But so you end up going to the Herlev Eagles in Denmark, you know, playing 3 years there. Going to ask you about how your experience was those 3 years. Obviously, you liked it to stay 3 years and how the league was as itself. But first, I have to notice something. When looking at your stats, your first year, 109 penalty minutes, you know, third year, 83. So, but especially that first year, was it an adjustment coming over and playing the way you did? And then, you know, a couple more calls, the arm was getting raised a little more often.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I didn't know that they were going to call everything on me. So I still tried to play the same way, and I had to learn pretty quickly that wasn't going to fly over here. But it was pretty funny. My coach, my first year over here, JP McCollum, he's from Halifax, and he actually trains Brad Marchand in the summer. He's his personal trainer. So I mean, as bad as the penalty minute seemed, he liked the feistiness out of the little guy. So it was okay with him.
He was used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but as I said, you end up staying 3 years there. You know, just for people who obviously aren't familiar with Denmark, like myself, like how was the city? How was the experience of the league? Like, you know, how does it compare to maybe some other leagues you've played? And like one comparison I guess you could maybe talk about a bit is because you end up going to Norway after, and we both have played in that league. And so how do you think they compare to each other?
Yeah, they're very similar. Norway's, I don't know, when you played in Norway, did they have a lot of NHL size arenas?
I think it was like Stavanger and were you guys NHL or were you Olympic?
No, I think we were a little bigger, but
Manglerud was like a hybrid.
Yeah, like they had a lot of hybrids. Valoranga, when I went there, they built a new arena. They were NHL size. I found Norway a lot more physical, same in kind of skill level, but definitely a lot more physical. Denmark's not overly physical. There's not a lot of big hits. As you can see from my 103 penalty minutes. but my time in Herlev, I loved it there. It's the town is, I mean, it's not much of a town. It's a suburb of Copenhagen. So it's 20 minute drive to Copenhagen. So that's the exciting part. I spent a lot of time in Copenhagen touring, going down with the guys after games. There's definitely a lot to do. I mean, I forget how many it is. Me and my wife have counted like around 20 countries we visited now, and Copenhagen's probably our favorite city out of all of them, we both say. So a lot of fun there. And then the team as a whole, we struggled my first year, and then we made a lot of changes after that year, and it was exciting. I saw the team moving in the right direction. The second year and third year, we were a lot more successful than we were my first year. And then on top of that, just the board, the group, the GM and the owners and the coaches, like they treat you like really well there. And that's kind of been their draw. They're not a high budget team, but every player that plays there talks about how well they're treated and how much they've enjoyed their time there. So that's, I mean, it's kudos to them. It looks good on them.
I love organizations like that because it is really hard to the Europe game. It's a lot of sponsor money that pays for these big salaries because, you know, you're not getting the 10,000-12,000, especially in these leagues, fans a game. So it's good that organizations like that can understand like, hey, Nokmil will pay you the high salary in the week, but we're going to treat you great and make you feel welcome here. And, you know, anything you need, like, just let us know. Because it makes, especially for, like, imports coming over, right? Like, they're moving to a new country, new experience, and somewhere they're not familiar with.
Yeah, it goes a long way. I mean, I remember my first week there, the GM took all the imports on a bike ride through Copenhagen. I think it was, like, an hour bike ride. But it was a He's a funny guy. He was all jacked up for it, dressed up in his biker, I don't know, spandex and stuff like that, and took us for lunch and showed us around Copenhagen, just the little things like that. And it's hard to put a price on that, right? A lot of people want to go somewhere where they're getting paid more money, but it's not always better. It's what I've learned from going to different places and being there, obviously.
Maybe because we kind of went through the same experiences. Like, of course, if there was a chance to make millions of euros a year, who wouldn't take it? But at the same time, I think when you look back on your experiences in Europe, like whenever the career is done, you don't think of a place and go, oh yeah, I made good money there. It's, you know, the guys, how you're treated, the city,
exactly,
experiences with the family. So, and as I touched on, like the next year you end up going to Stjernen in there. So a team that obviously I know a bit about. I was just looking at your roster. So obviously Tim Magali was there, Daniel Levins, who you know, from the area I'm from in Canada, and I shot on me as well at goalie school, is a great dude. But one guy that was there, and it's just so funny to see a complete 180, was Andrew O'Brien. So I know from the year before, because I met him through a buddy of mine who played with Monahan and stuff. So they're buddies. Yeah. And I think the year before he set the league record with like 300 and something penalty minutes. Yeah, and then And then he came back the next year for a little bit and, you know, only racked up 50 in about 12 games. But that guy is, when you see him on the ice, you're terrified of him because he is just a unit, like move, has a
can fly,
has a cannon shot, not afraid to be physical, clearly not afraid to tell the refs to F off. And, but when you get him off the ice, he's just like the funniest guy ever. Yeah. Just, you know, complete moron at times. But
yeah, I got along with him right away. I heard a lot of stories about him, didn't know him. I heard a lot of stories from the guys from the year before. And we picked him up and I came into the rink that day and I saw his stall was right next to mine. I was like, holy shit, what am I going to say to this guy? Like, heard he's an animal or whatever. And then right away, I mean, Obi got along. I think he liked my feistiness, so he appreciated it. And we had some funny times. He definitely made his presence felt the day he was back in that room. That's for sure.
I just remember too, like that year would have been the year in Stjernan would have been a little different for you, right? Like that was the first like full year of COVID where it was like in and out of fans. Like, so what was it? What was Norway doing? Were they playing without fans or how did it work?
We had 50% we were allowed. And then depending where you went, like Storhamar was zero. Stavanger, I don't remember if they had fans or not. Because even if they had 50, it would have felt like zero because their rink's so big. Valoranga was zero. I think most teams were zero except for maybe us and Sparta. Maybe we could do 50. And then we got COVID. Our team got COVID. We were the super spreaders, I guess. We got COVID January 3rd, I want to say, against a game against Sparta. And then right after that, it trickled down to Sparta got COVID. And then the team they played after us got COVID, Storhamar, I think. And then they shut the league down. And we stayed there for 2.5 months practicing. And they said the season was going to start up again, and it never did.
Were you at least still getting paid?
Yeah, we were getting paid, so that's good.
Jeez.
But I mean, by that point, by the end of the 2.5 months, I think everyone was ready to go home and cancel the contract at that point. It was a long 2.5 months of practice.
Well, and two, you guys would have been kind of like in lockdown, not being able to do anything, and not that there is much to do in that town anyways. No, like it's a smaller town.
Everything was closed. There was nothing to do. We could be at the rink and practice, but we couldn't be at someone's house more than five people. Like, didn't make much sense, but those are the rules. And so, like, even when we left the rink, it's like, I can ask my three guys to hang out, but you can't come because we're over the limit. So... pick your three favorite players on the team and go hang out with them.
your Call of Duty game must have taken an absolute spike in skill.
Yeah, me and Leaves were on fire that year. We were getting like two, three wins a day. We were logging a lot of hours. I don't think both the wives were too happy with us.
One of my best buddies, like we're big into Chell and we always reminisce about that year. Like we played so much Chell, like the 3-on-3 league. And it was just like it was so funny. Like he got COVID, I think twice that year. And the second time, like I just get this message on my phone. And it's like, guess what? And I'm like, I don't know. Like you guys are back to 50% fans. Like, I don't know. And he goes, no, man. He's like, I got COVID again.
Yeah, excited for fucking 24 more hours on video games a day.
Yeah, he's just like two weeks locked in doing nothing, don't feel bad about it, fucking Chell, here we go.
And then when Obi came, we picked up Obi and he went through a couple of controllers playing Warzone, not his game.
I don't believe that. I unfortunately I can never get into the Warzone. I like the normal multiplayer kind of Warzone's too much for me, but After that year, you end up heading over to Selb there in the Dell 2. So they were just a new team that had just won the third league and come up. That's where we met. I came there in February that year. And obviously that first year for you guys was a little tough. You know, a lot of COVID, a lot of up and down. Roster probably not structured the right way for the Dell 2, which is tough for the teams who come up. They don't really have much time to make changes. But you know, what stands out to me that year was just kind of the end. Like we kind of got playing the best hockey at the right time, and went into a, you know, a nice derby series there to stay in the league with Bayreuth. And a lot of people wrote us off, but evidently, you know, guys like yourself and then, you know, Miggs and Levins, who came there at the end just to play basically 12 games, you know, your line together was just kind of the difference for us, I felt like. And I'm sure for you playing again with Levins, that chemistry, it was just kind of natural and, you know, picked up where you guys left off.
Yeah, it was easy. It was a nice pickup for me, for sure. I was excited when you told me we were picking him up. I knew it'd be easy. I was still logging 7 hours a day on video games with him, so I knew it would be easy chemistry. And then I think me, him, and Miggs connected. We kind of complemented each other, all three of us, in different ways. We all kind of all bring something different to the table. So I think it was good. I mean, we went into that first play down series and we all wanted to end it as soon as possible. So I think that helped too. No one wanted to prolong it any longer than we had to. So we wanted to get it done, and we were lucky enough to get it done, or not lucky enough, but fortunate enough.
I think we were due. I say we, I wasn't there the whole year, but I think you guys were due some luck finally, or some, you know, positiveness.
I pulled my groin that year too. So I missed 2.5 months. So it felt like me, like I was just starting the season over too when Leafs came there. Like, I don't know, maybe I played a game before he got there.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember I was in Krimichaw at the start. I remember the one game we played you guys there, and you were the only fan up in the stands because there was still,
still no COVID. Yeah, no fans. I was the only one there. Yeah.
Yeah, look good. Dress well. then after, like, obviously in Selb there, you end up staying, you know, a year and a half there, heading back to Denmark. You know, Denmark's a league that I think you've obviously, as we talked about before, you played 3 years there in Herlev. You know, you went to Rungsted last season. This year you've gone to Herning. So, you know, again, like, for someone like myself, like, I never got to play in that league. I don't know these cities. Like, how was the Rungsted experience, and how is it currently, you know, in Herning in terms of, you know, teams and also like the city and what there is to do for, you know, imports like yourself?
Yeah, Rungsted was another Copenhagen team, so it was pretty nice. I was back in Copenhagen. Lots to do in Copenhagen, so I've said, I love it there. It was obviously a different team, kind of a rivalry team of Herlev, so that was a little weird for me at first. But Rungsted, especially in the last 5 years in this league, they have a winning record. They've won 2 finals. They've been to the finals 3 or 4 times. So it was an exciting move for me, a team I thought had a good chance. They had a lot of injuries when I went there. I think they were playing with like 13 skaters, I think, by the time I got there. So they had a lot of injuries, but I could tell by the roster that they had a really good team. But unfortunately, we didn't get healthy all year. So we played short all year. We finished 8th. Played the first seed in the playoffs, and we took them to 7, short 2 high quality imports. Maybe the best 2 imports on our team didn't play from the time I got there till the playoffs. So, I mean, they could have been a big difference maker for us, but I mean, health, concussions, you got to take care of the head. So, I mean, both of them are back playing now, so that's good. I'm happy they're both back playing now. And it sucked last year that they couldn't play, but I mean, I think every player was on their side. Like, obviously don't push through a head problem. No one wants to see. I don't want to win a championship so someone can, be in a wheelchair the rest of their life. So it was, it's good to see them both back healthy now. They're both doing good in their respective leagues. And then now, this year in Herning, they did a lot. We have a lot of new guys from last year. I think, nine guys, and last year they came second place. They made it to the finals and lost. They actually have the most winning history in this league, but haven't won for 12 years. So for me at my age, I want to come to a winning team now. I think it's time for that. And I knew that they're really hungry to win here, and I heard great things about the management here. I was told I would notice like a big difference just because of how rich their hockey history is here, how they run things. And I've definitely noticed that since I've been here. So I'm really enjoying it. We're off to not such a good start. We're middle of the pack right now, but the expectations for us are much higher. And I don't think anyone's worried, though. We think we know that eventually with all the new guys, it takes some time. And I think we think it'll turn around as the season goes on here.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for you guys. Just looking at your roster, it brought a cool question to me just based on remembering it, too. Like in these leagues, like, you know, Denmark, Norway, I feel like there's some teams where you have a lot of imports in terms of North American guys, and then there's teams where you don't have many. And like, you know, yourself right now, I believe it's you, one other guy, and then Carruth, the goalie. So there's only...
No, we got the Swedes too.
But that's North American, the North Americans, I mean.
Oh, okay. So here imports are... Yeah, there's not as many. So when I left Denmark, you were only allowed 6 imports on a team, and now I think it's 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so there used to be a lot of Canadian North American imports, but now there's not very many. You're right. Like, we only have the 3 of us on this team. And there's really just like, there's like a couple on each team, North Americans. There's a lot of Swedes taking up import spots in this league now.
Yeah. And no, I was curious to you, like how is that for you? Like, do you know, like, obviously, like, Swedish people are great people. Like, it's not, mm-hmm. that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying, like, you know, from being in leagues like the Dell 2, where it's a lot of North American, and like your other Denmark teams, I'm sure there was a lot of North Americans, to now, yeah. where there's only you and 2 other guys. Like, do you notice that at all? Or is it just, you know, kind of go to the rink as usual?
Yeah, not really. The Danes are, I find them, like, out of all the European people that I played with, like, they're the most similar to Canadians. So I find it, like, very easy going to the rink and talking to them. And then the Swedes are kind of right there with them. And then, I mean, one of the Swedes on our team I played with during my time in Herlev. Herlev was, when I was in Herlev, we had a lot. We didn't have that many North Americans on our team. Maybe we'd had, my first year we had all North American imports. My second year, there's only 3 of us. And my last year, I was the only one. So it's kind of normal to me again.
I know sometimes, like, at least when I was in, like, Manglerud, like, there was me, one other North American, and then we had 2 Swedes, because the Swedes could, like, work or they were going to school. So it was like, it would save the team money, and they really wanted to pay, like, 2 imports. So, which sometimes happened with those lower teams, but obviously, you know, Herning has got money and there's no problem there's there.
No, I think maybe part of the reason is the flight travel and the visas and all that stuff they don't have to get for the player, for mm-hmm. a Swede or a Finn or someone that already has a European citizen. Whereas they have to pay for our visas, pay for our flights, which are much more expensive than flying from Sweden and or wherever else in Europe, right? So I think all that kind of adds into it, where maybe a guy's just as good as a European player, but then you have all these extra costs. Maybe they don't want to pay that.
Oh, it makes sense. I remember in Norway, I got there in August. I got my, like, playing visa, like, the day of the game, and, like, we had to drive to so many appointments, and it took forever.
Bigger hassle.
Yeah. No, for sure. So you mentioned before, you know, your wife, obviously, Jess, comes. She's there right now with you in Denmark.
She just went home. We're building a house, so she went home to pick countertops and tables and whatnot, and she's coming back after that.
So someone's got to do it. I mean, but no. One thing I wanted to ask, like, it must have been cool for her over these, you know, past whatever it is, 6-7 years, to, as you said, like, you guys have visited 20 countries. You know, having a supportive partner like that is obviously makes traveling somewhere easier, because you'll know at least one person you're seeing every day when you come home. But has she enjoyed the ride, you know, as well, like, for the most part?
She loves it. I mean, she works from home, so it's easy for her to come over here and work. Her work's really, really good with her with that. And no, she keeps saying, like, if you want to keep playing, you can keep playing. I like it over here. So, I mean, that's good to have that support system too. If she told me to hang them up, I'd probably have to listen to her and do that. So, but she's been very supportive over the years. And every once in a while, I'm like, oh, maybe next year will be the end year. I always say that, because I never really know. And she's like, no, but if you want to keep playing, you can keep playing. Like, don't do it because of me. So she's been great, great with that. I can't thank her enough for that.
Listen to her, because I've told you, like, you know, you have the other thing as well, which you've been doing every summer, and I'll bring that up in a sec, but play as long as you can, man, or as long as it makes sense, I would say, because, you know, there's people like myself who can't anymore. And, you know, you always miss kind of that feeling and, you know, wish you could have got a couple more years. But it's good to have a supportive wife like that, as you said, because it could be the opposite, where you have someone being like, nope, like, this is your last year, you're done.
I've heard lots of those stories. I think that's a tough way to go out, right? Like, not on your terms.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was getting told that, I would do it, but it's just, I think it's tough. I feel for those guys.
So we'll talk, we'll check it off to, you know, you're just going year by year, and who knows.
I've been year by year for 7 years now.
It's never ending. I'm curious too. So throughout your career, like, you know, we've mentioned you're not the tallest guy. Like, did you feel that you had a lot of adversity or a lot of things to prove being an undersized guy throughout your career?
Yeah, on certain teams, depending. Yeah, so I had some coaches mention to me, like, oh, I can't put you on the ice because you were too small, and they had bigger centermen and stuff like that. Whereas I don't really notice that. I feel like I'm just as tall until I see the video camera after and see how short I am. But yeah, there's always stuff like that, or coaches, like, just a lot of coaches that, you know, why couldn't I do this? Oh, well, you're a little smaller, stuff like that. But I don't know. I like to think when you get traded so much, the team that you get traded to, they usually treat you pretty well. And I was never in one place too long other than university. And they recruited me there, so they knew how small I was before I got there. But yeah, there's definitely some times with, like, minor hockey and that stuff. No, it was more after that that I would hear things. But I mean, I tried to get stronger as I went, so to try to put those comments away.
You definitely don't play the way you're built, that's for sure. You definitely play like a 6'3", 6'4" guy. But no, and then before we were talking about, like, you, when you finished university there, and I think for at least a couple of years now, you, every year when the season ends, when you go home, like, you go right into kind of working as a teacher. I'm curious, like, what kind of made you want to start doing that? Because when you're an athlete like yourself, you know, you train all summer, you spend, you know, whatever it is, 8-9 months, you know, grinding every day, putting your body through a lot. And a lot of guys, when they come home in the off season, like, you know, they want to relax and just, you know, take some time and then start training it for the next year. But you want to go to work. So
explain that. Well, I'm building a house for starters. No, but it was more for me, like, you don't use it, you lose it type model. Like, if I don't go home and I don't teach, how am I supposed to teach after, if I played 7 years and I haven't done it for 7 years? Like, oh, my anxiety would be through the roof the first day in the class. I would forget how to do everything, right? So for me, it's kind of, I know that that's what I want to do when I'm done playing. So I want to stay fresh in it and stay up to date, because it's kind of a profession that's always changing too. The curriculum is always changing for kids nowadays. How they're learning is always changing. So it's something for me I wanted to stay fresh in and kind of stay relevant. And for when I am done playing hockey, that it's more of an easier transition over there. And also in the Sioux right now, they're having a hard time with getting supply teachers. So I figured, why not? I'm an extra body that can help them out. So
that was going to be my next question. Like, it's pretty easy to, like, to find the work when you get home because they're in need.
For now, yeah. So that's also the year by year thing. When I hear that it's not going to be so hard for them to find people anymore, I'm probably going to have to make a tough decision. But for now, they're having, especially in the spring months, they're having a hard time finding substitute teachers for whatever reason. I don't know those reasons, but I'm more than happy to come. And most times I work, when I'm home, I work almost every day. So I'm happy to help them, and I've had some good times doing that.
Well, I'm sure probably the problem is it's up in the Sioux and nobody wants to commute up there.
Exactly. So. Yeah, it's probably a good reason.
What age groups do you, like, sub in for? Or is it just classes, or, like, how's it work?
It's elementary school in Ontario, so kindergarten to grade 8 for the most part. I like the younger age groups, the ones that are more willing to learn, but just aren't quite there yet. I describe it as, but I mean, this summer I was with a grade eight class that for 2 months I went on a long, I took a long-term substitute position with the same class, a grade eight class. So, I mean, I've been through, or I've been with lots of different grades and I've enjoyed all of them. I mean, the kids are so interesting, right? They come with a different mindset every day and you have lots of laughs with them and they get mad at you, but you're just trying to do what you can best for them. You realize now, I didn't realize when I was a student, but yeah, it's funny to be on the other side, but yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And I mean, whatever, when I'm done, whatever age group I get, I'll definitely be happy with.
Last school question, because we don't want to just, this isn't a school podcast. So yeah. I'm curious, like how do you like plan your like lesson plans and stuff when you get back and you know what class you're taking? Like, is it something that you can plan like for 2 months right away and you just kind of grind it out? Or is it basically every week or every day you're having to like make adjustments or make new plans for the next day?
It's a little bit of all of that. So when I'm substituting day by day in a different class every day, I go in and the teacher would leave what to do during the day and you kind of just go through that kind of thing. But when I took the long term, the teacher sent me everything that they learned so far. So then I have to look at the rest of their curriculum, what they haven't touched on, and kind of plan that way. So then you plan for 2 months and then you plan day to day in those 2 months. But of course, some days don't go as you plan. You don't get through as much or you get through too much. So you kind of alters day to day. But I mean, the more I went through it, the more I kind of had a feel for how much I could get through in a day.
Man, I'd be so stressed. Like, creating lessons plans, like just, oh.
Yeah, you try to make it fun and enjoyable for the kids, right? You try to like put yourself in, like for me, this, when I was with the grade eights, like put myself in a 13-year-old's shoes again. And like, what would I find enjoyable? How would I find it enjoyable to learn and try to find a way to do it that way?
No, it's good. And I think it's, as you said before, like it's good that you know, every year continuing to do it so that it's not a total shock, like when you know, the day does come that you're going to transition fully. But, and also, as you said, building the house, need a little bit of money there. Why not? Right. So, two more for you before I let you go here.
Okay.
Do you think when you look back on, you know, the career you've had, like obviously it's still going, but did you think you would have had the career you've had so far looking back?
No, not really. I mean, I always had the self-confidence that I was going to make it to the OHL as I got older. I just felt like I could do it. I don't know why, but when I was at school, I didn't think I would have a 7-year pro or career after I was done playing. I thought like 3 years max, but I was taking it year by year. Now I'm on year 7, so that's not something I thought I'd be doing, playing until I was 32, but we're here and I'm still going. So
well, good for you, man. It's nice. I think it's a nice surprise when, you know, you can continue to do something you love. You also have your foot partially in the other door for life after. And as you said, there's no pressure to be done after this year. Like, as I said, you have support from your wife, you know, you still enjoy what you do, and eventually, hopefully you're going to be able to go out on your own terms, whenever that is. So
yeah, exactly.
Then last one here, try to end always on this question. I like to hear kind of people's thoughts on it, but, what is one piece of advice, or if you have multiple pieces of advice, you would give your younger self and maybe some of the younger listeners listening. So if you were talking to Brett Thompson at 16, 17, 18 years old, or any young listeners out there, what are one or multiple pieces of advice you would give them?
Yeah. That's tough. I think I'll get to myself after. I think like for young kids now, like the biggest thing is like play multiple sports. I think like that's the most ridiculous thing, how much time young kids are spending at the rink in the summers. I mean, I always played soccer, basketball, baseball growing up. And I think a good hockey player is an athletic person, not just a hockey player for the most part, is my belief in it, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But that's what I would tell young players, is to experience different sports, experience different, even different athletes that you'll play with in those sports. It'll change your perspective on things. It'll make you a better athlete, which should make you a better hockey player. And for me, it's just, I don't know, Brett Thompson, younger person, work hard, be humble, I would say, like, and enjoy the ride, I guess. It goes by like very quick. Like I started to maybe learn or enjoy that and learn that more after I was, my 5-year junior career went by. I thought I was going to be in junior forever. And then I was shocked when it ended. But I think since then I've done a good job at kind of appreciating the moment and kind of taking day by day and just enjoying what you're doing.
Your first part there, I think the two sport thing, multiple people have said that, and I agree. Like, it's, you want to give yourself a break from it and, you know, go have fun. It makes you a better athlete too. You meet different people. Also, I think it gives your brain a bit of a rest because you're not continually stressing with one sport. And then for you, like, one thing I was going to say, I think you've done a good job of what you said of enjoying the experience, especially in pro. And you've also, as we would know personally, like, you know, if something isn't worth it in a situation, you try to find another avenue that is. And, you know, whether that's a changing of a team, just to make sure you're still enjoying the experience, enjoying being over in Europe and getting paid to do something you love. So I think that's a credit to you and just kind of your character of, you know, you're not going to be a person that's just going to stay somewhere to say you stayed there. Like, you want to go and enjoy, and for both you and your and Jess. So
yeah.
Testament to you, as I said. I appreciate you taking the time again today.
No problem.
You know, can't keep you too late. You know, you got a big game tomorrow. So
yeah,
I appreciate it, man. It was awesome to hear your story. You know, definitely learned some stuff, especially about the OHL. Obviously never going that route, and hopefully the younger listeners did too. But thanks again, man. And we'll stay in touch, obviously, yeah, following you guys along this year for sure.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. It was a good trip down memory lane there for me. I don't really talk about that stuff too much, so it's good to think back and talk about it again.
It's always good to reminisce, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks again. And you know, for those listening, if you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram. Check out the live video on YouTube. We're available on all streaming platforms. And until next week, cheers and ciao.